First off, I'm Andy Schindler, and I'm the Chief Technology and Solutions Officer for Sony DAVC Media Solutions. Our first thing needs to be to find a shorter name. It's too long to look it up. Last piece of the puzzle. So the piece that we're going to be talking about today is, this is not a news story for us. It's something that has been kind of crawling, trying for what we've been doing over the last year and a half. Some other sessions that I've spoken at, one of the things that you should know about are how we kind of approach things philosophically is we shut down all of our data centers globally and moved everything into AWS. So we do everything from avails rights management all the way out through mass distribution, 1,200 endpoints, things of that nature, full OTT commerce solutions play out, and not one piece of it is running on-prem. The entire thing is running in the cloud right now. And so part of that is just philosophically, some of the things that have that has enabled us to do, that when we kind of set forth on our vision many years ago, and I think all of us have been through this kind of journey, what we've learned and what's changed. So where do we start? I know there's been some sessions today, and there's been a lot of conversations. Recently, standards is a very big thing that everybody talks about. And end-to-end standards has been really kind of a central theme to that. And those standards have been talked about probably for the last 20 years. I think we've all seen multiple standards come and go. They existed for periods of time, and either the groups that made them died off, or we as an industry have kind of moved on. Now we're dealing with IMF, we deal with the EMA spec. There's all sorts of things. And you know, what's really important is, if you kind of use an analogy to the physical supply chains of the past, you have these concepts of these warehouses where there are these groupings of products, right? And everything was grouped in a way where it was based on that standardization. You got a huge amount of efficiency out of the fact that you created these units that were either all the same book or all of the same widget. It doesn't really matter. And either sorted by size or some level of physicality, or just around the fact that it was the exact same object, right? The same book, and so we need to do things in quantity. And that created one level of efficiency across those types of supply chains, and ERP systems were built around it and things like that, which of course created, you know, predictability and decreased complexity in terms of how people were doing distribution. But then a company comes along and it's Amazon, right? And purely on the physical side, not AWS, but Amazon.com, and they really approached the problem in a unique way, right? And the big thing that they used was data. And the data basically told them that you no longer needed to have conformity of those assets, right? And in this case, they're physical components. And what they did is they made use of space. And they said, well, if something can just physically fit here, then that is the best place to put it. And I don't need to actually have two books of the exact same next to each other. In fact, I can have a toy next to a book, next to a printer. And they have no human relationship around them. It's all about how a computer sees them. And a computer says, I have a physical space that can hold something, therefore this is the best place for me to store it. And it's the fastest way to get out of it what we need. And we have a huge amount of automation that gets built around those things. And so it started to dawn on me that actually, you know, you take a look at the world of Amazon.com, where you have the same problem that a lot of us deal with. When you're not dealing with just OTT stuff, but in terms of like orders for digital distribution, where you effectively have completely unpredictable requests, right? Everybody tries to bucket things and say, well, there's always going to be a rush order, there's always going to be a catalog, but in reality, you don't really know at any given time, at least from like, you know, the perspectives of like a Deluxe or Technical or Premier or Sony, what is coming. Right? Some people place orders in the systems, they're done in an unpredictable manner, and there is an expectation that things will get out the door very quickly. Well, if physical deliveries of unpredictable requests can now be delivered to your door in an hour, then certainly from a digital perspective, we should be able to either meet that or exceed that substantially. And the fact that there are still SLAs in the marketplace of days, it seems fairly ridiculous. Now, I understand why those exist, and so it's not ridiculous from the perspective of how did we get there. What really comes as the problem is that we don't actually seem to be changing some of those philosophies, we actually seem to be embracing more of them. So, this is really kind of how we've all been working for a pretty long period of time, right? Everything has been, we've been trying to drive to a lowest common denominator. that lowest common denominator has been one where, whether it was a video file source where we'd say, well, we really need ProRes or a J2K or two or three sources to choose from, and it would really make life easy if you would just choose from a set of contained specs. And we'd really like you to just tell us that this is the only way that you want metadata delivered, because if we can create those standards, then we can really make it super efficient. And that made a lot of sense back in 2005 and 2007 and 2010, when we were all living with really constrained resources, right? When we didn't have the ability to just scale infrastructure dynamically, but we had to deal with that unpredictable ordering mechanism, and we had to deal with the fact that if you really wanted anything from anything, we needed to be able to scale a peak and keep that infrastructure at that time. One of the real big benefits that we've gotten out of this is the fact that we no longer have those constraints, but yet we continue to talk about standards in a way as if we're still living with those constraints. And so that pressure that we're creating to continue to kind of model things out as they were 10 years ago is no longer necessary. And so we're actually holding back the ability for people to be creative. And in fact, I think we all kind of, you know, talk anecdotally about things like the Netflix in a box. And it's like, how many Netflixes in a box do we need, right? We as consumers, we want people to differentiate, we want new things. And then as business, counterparts, we end up trying to pigeonhole everything into something that's simple and repeatable, when in fact that, you put a lot of automation in place and you enable it through cloud processing and you're no longer restricted. And so, what we've done is we've now said, look, the power actually exists in the complexity of the problem, not the simplicity of the problem. The simplicity was yesterday. Now what we should do is we should be embracing the fact that we literally can make anything from anything. We're no longer limited by the fact that we have to have, huge teams of people making decisions about how they're going to flow things through. So as an example of that, we have a process that we use within our system that we call materials analysis. And what it does is it analyzes and interrogates the available inventory that we have at any given time. So when somebody says, I want Spider-Man and I need it to go to RTL, it will go and it will analyze all of the available components that sit within our cloud storage, which is about a million hours of content right now. So about 20 petabytes of content. And if we try and force as much to be discrete components wherever we can, and it'll go through and it'll say, okay, I understand this spec that RTL requires, and I see all of the available components, and it might require localization because they may not have a German version in there, but we can create anything from anything. We no longer have to go back to a world where we have to return back, in this case, the Sony Pictures, and say, I'm going to need the German MUX asset in order to fulfill this delivery, which is only just creating more time, because all we've done is we've kind of just kicked the can and said, well, it's back to you. And even if we stop the clock for our own purposes of an SLA, we haven't really stopped the clock in terms of the goal that we're trying to achieve, which is the revenue that Sony Pictures is trying to do and RTLs need to actually broadcast that particular title. Having all of that stuff in the cloud and allowing us to be able to create anything from anything has actually allowed us to get incredibly fast in our ability to turn things around. 99% of everything that we deliver today is delivered the same day as it's requested. That has been a huge challenge for us to overcome when we used to have SLAs that were measured on 3 to 5 days in timescales. For some of our clients, we're down to 24 minutes from request to actually play it, right? And even now, we think that's too long, right? We did that from the perspective of saying, well, we should be able to leverage all of that cloud computing. Now we can say, oh, well, if I'm going to do a transcode and I'm doing segment encoding, I can span that over 1,000 machines. So I can literally break up a 100-minute movie into 30-second chunks, and I can have the entire thing finished in 4 to 6 minutes. Like, these are fundamental changes, and what we don't ask of people is, well, please make sure you only give us, these 20 things to work with. In fact, we never want to restrict anybody on anything. We want to say, do whatever you want. In fact, let the people that you're signing deals with push the limits, because we have an infrastructure that's suddenly available to do that. So that's been pretty important. And I talk about this from a perspective of what we've been doing, but this is not about us. This is about how, as an industry, we We need to fundamentally shift, because the challenges that we're encountering now are no longer technical, they're emotional, right? We run into the problem where we engage with people who just simply can't get past the way they've been doing something for 20 years, and they feel comfortable with it. They like the fact that they can go to a bay, and they can talk to a person, and they know that person on the other end of the phone, and that's great, but it doesn't scale. Right? And so we went through a whole period of time where everybody tried to outsource and we would use, you know, resources in India or the Ukraine or Argentina or something like that. And that, you know, kind of worked for some aspects of it. We felt comfortable with offshoring development or kind of a hosted managed service offering. But when it came to real kind of broad-based distribution, especially as of late, right, we had the captivity of Pirates of the Caribbean with the hackers recently. There was the Oranges and New Black Season 5 that was held hostage. So suddenly we have a security problem that we all have to look at and say, well, hang on a minute. Do we really want to have all of our content really distributed that way? Or do we actually want to maintain more control? So those things, people tend to go into this state of, well, I can't put it in the cloud, and I can't touch it. I need to have it within my own environment, because then I know it's protected. And the reality is, you're no better protected controlling yourself than putting it somewhere else with somebody who's spending $10 billion on security, like an Amazon or Microsoft or Google. This is not a shill speech for Amazon, it just happened to be the one that we chose. But it has much more to do with the fact that none of us have the scale and the capacity to invest the kind of money that's required to really put the protections around this. So we tend to fall back to stuff that makes us feel safe from an emotional perspective, but it doesn't move us forward.
Would you say that you're doing localization in 24 minutes? So, I mean, are you dubbing and subtitling in 24 minutes?
So that's subtitling.
Yeah.
So in the case with the 24 minutes, we're actually taking Japanese content. We get a script ahead of time, so we do some pre-prep for the script. While we're doing the transcode and the final HLS packaging that's going to go for streaming, in parallel to that, they're going through and spot checking the final episode of the podcast. That gets mucked up and put up as a sidebar on something.
So there's a human spot checking at the end?
At the end, yeah. For that piece, yep. Absolutely. This is for anime. This is a company called Funimation. So the fans would let us know within about 3 frames that that thing was wrong. So that's usually never the problem. But yeah. That's exactly how we do it. So I talk a lot about kind of the potential versus standardization. And you know, I don't think that things should be a pendulum swing. I'm not saying that standards should just be thrown out, the whole world should be anarchy. I don't think that's a reasonable case to make. But I think there are reasonable cases to say that we no longer need to apply these creative limitations to how we do things simply to get the level of cost reduction that we want to deal with, or for that predictability. So when you talk about things like content engines, like content standardization, IMF may not be the ultimate end state, but it's certainly a big step in the right direction, right? Even when we all have kind of stored assets in the past, we have always kind of done them in a way where they're philosophically the IMF one, right? We've all created hierarchies. We've all tried to create kits and groups of things to show conformance. And you know, the ultimate dream has always been this late binding concept where we can just keep adding to it and new edits would come in. There's no question that anything inbound, the more standardization that you create, at least about how we communicate with each other, is incredibly important. But there's no reason on the outbound that we should have anything like that. We shouldn't have to adhere to any of those kind of things. EMA is a great spec. If there's 300 companies that we have to deliver to that don't take EMA, that should not be a reason to run out and enforce it. It should be a reason to simply say, no problem, we'll transform it. It's, what's the big deal? Transformation has been going on well before digital distribution got here. There's been EDI services for ages, right? There's huge, massive systems that have been running at Exxon and Walmart, and all these companies are doing data transformation well before digital distribution ever took place. And then we come along, and we kind of act with a bit of hubris that says, this is the most complicated thing we've ever seen. And it just isn't, right? It was expensive before, and now it just requires a little more attention. And again, it doesn't mean that standards don't help, but they're not necessary for the purposes of making sure that everybody keeps up. And one of my concerns with things like EMA and stuff like that is that the people who are kind of driving it, right? If you look at the EMA board, it's made up of Netflix, Google, Sony PlayStation, Microsoft Xbox. That's great. What about the 400 other companies who can't participate at that level? What the hell do they do? Right? And the new unique things that we enjoy generally don't come from the big five. They come from the smaller ones who may get acquired by those guys, and that's wonderful. But there's a bit of stifling of innovation if we can't open up our ability to deliver. And more importantly, you know, as we look at our content owners or our customers, they should be able to sign deals with people without having to have long, drawn-out operational conversations about the capabilities in order to service those deals, and just simply rely on the fact that we, as kind of a middle tier within this world, are able to create anything that they need. One of the ways that we've tried to address this is to kind of move to the end state, which is we spend a lot of energy, which companies like Asper and Signia are clearly very happy about, in delivering content out. And the problem is we have proliferated our content, and I'm saying our in a very general sense, everywhere, right? We all act shocked when something gets stolen, as if we haven't actually been the enablers of it the entire time. And, you know, many years ago, we were all just shipping tapes around using FedEx and DHL, and I don't understand why suddenly, I guess it's the ease of not robbing a UPS truck, maybe that was the big barrier here, but other than that, we've really kind of proliferated this problem pretty significantly. And so, what we've taken to doing now is we're really starting to embrace a model that says we can just store one of everything in the cloud. We don't need 500 copies of these things. I mean, Amazon would love it, I guess all of our S3 costs, we can amortize them against each other, that would be great. I'm happy to start a small union for that, I suppose. but nobody else is benefiting other than somebody who's actually paying for all of that, or receiving revenue for all of that extra storage. I would imagine if we ran some sort of a fingerprint analysis on S3, we would find that collectively we've got the same titles up there about 100 times, right? In many cases, even in Amazon's own case, we deliver to Amazon Video by storing it on S3, moving it out via Aspera, back into an S3 bucket that Amazon Video hosts. Like, that is the absolute definition of insanity. And so what we're really trying to do is say, actually, we think that avails are really important because avails are effectively that locking mechanism, right? And we can talk about BitLockers, and there's all new technologies about how you might wrap media, but at its very simple state, you keep an avail, you keep a singular version of an asset, you make it available for just-in-time transcoding or DRM wrapping, and you provide to every single endpoint, not the asset itself, but a unique signed encrypted URL that's DRM, where the content owner actually has the control over whether or not they're doing something. So many years ago at Paramount, there was a big fight between Tom Cruise and Sonya Redstone, and requests came down to remove Tom Cruise artwork from things. And I am sure, beyond just the world of, you know, us having to do stuff from a digital distribution perspective, the lawyers went crazy trying to figure out what to do. Wouldn't it be wonderful if they could just come and turn it off? And it literally is off everywhere. Or if there was actually a problem found, Jurassic World went out, and I remember opening night of Jurassic World on TVOD services, the closed captions were off by 17 seconds, right? It happens, these things get out. Wouldn't it be great if we could just replace one file collectively and everybody in the next stream got the better video, not running around like lunatics trying to figure out the 47 platforms we have to deliver it to? These are no longer things that are competitive. These are not differentiators, right? The differentiators around how do we actually build the business logic? How do you build all of the creative functions that enable those things? But the storage of singular assets and this common repository that we can pull from, it doesn't need to be one, it needs to be virtualized, right? There are assets that Deluxe has access to that we don't. That's great, we should share them. What's the point? We're spending a fortune delivering to each other. We're all frenemies. Right? It's all we're doing is spending a fortune moving all of this stuff around, putting a huge amount of bandwidth for what? So we can say that we possess something, as if the world of having a big tape library is now the thing that still deems that you get the work. It just doesn't work anymore. And so when we talk about, you know, kind of the title of this whole thesis of being that kind of last piece of the puzzle, this is the end state. this is the world that we all kind of collectively talk about, but because of competitive reasons and other things, we just don't make that final leap. And for our purposes at the ABC, that is absolutely something that we are just leaping to, because we recognize that there really is no other way to go. We have to get to a point where there is this cost-effective and scalable environment with a centralized model that people can rely on. So, I know there's drinks. that's my spiel for the day. Questions?
I got it. So, speaking about this one central place and talking about the EMA, what are your thoughts on their proposed repository?
So their proposed repository mandates, as far as I know, a certain set of specs. Why? I create thousands of specs all the time. It costs me no more to create one than it creates another. I don't charge more for one than another. I no longer charge for rush. Why? Why is there a rush? Why does the concept exist? It made sense in 1997 when I had an X number of bays and I couldn't scale, or I had to have a cost analysis that went into it. I no longer have that problem. Those aren't the challenges we face. So why do we keep applying old school rules to the new way of doing things? That's
so beyond that limitation, you're in favor of some sort of central repository?
I'm in favor of a virtualized repository. Do I think one company should own it all? No. I don't think that's realistic either. Yeah.
I have two questions. For instance, with this system, is there any kind of security alarm system in place? For instance, if a mom in Indiana wants to order some kind of G-rated family phone for her children, put them in front of the TV, and then go to her house for her, what's to stop a hacker from hacking in, changing the film titles, changing the metadata, and suddenly some R-rated explicit piece of content gets delivered? And she's back and the other room comes in and her kids are 20 minutes into an almost X-rated film. Is there some kind of alarm that sends it to a central art office? Are there still human beings monitoring the security that maybe in that few minute delivery window, someone realizes, oh wait, this family in Indiana is about to receive something they didn't expect.
So, I would tell you that there's three things. First of all, this is not the front end. Right? This is the repository, right? So there's still a level of a service out there who is registering a user, creating that front end, and all of those things. We're servicing the assets. Two, not even my own team has the right to edit or overwrite files. So the only access within our system is root access that can delete something or make those changes. So the only way to, and this is just a view that we've taken, doesn't mean it's right for everybody, but the only way that you can go put a new file up there is literally to create a new file. So if we wanted to prevent the fact where we've had problems, we've all had problems where we've had people accidentally delete, a petabyte of data because they ran a stupid script. We learned the hard way, you'll never do that again. And it's not because we think code reviews are gonna solve the problem, it's because we're simply just gonna lock them out. So yes, can a hacker get in? Would I be foolish enough to stand here and say nobody can ever get into anything? No, because the very next minute somebody will get into it, that'll be the dumbest thing ever. But I think you can go through a reasonable and pragmatic review of stuff that says, these are all of the things that we've taken to be cautious. And then the third piece really comes down to the titles themselves, right? And we use a measurement of logic that says, hey, if it's a new release, if it's a big title, if it's something that already has gained a lot of attention, that gets a lot of eyeballs on it. Both on our side, and we recognize that the consumers are going to have a lot of eyeballs on it too. Those go through manual QC processes versus the really long tail piece of content. At a million hours, it's just not possible for every piece of content to be watched fully end to end. So can something sneak through? Yes. Is the probability very low? Yes, it is. I can tell you after almost 700,000 deliveries over the last 4 years, we've had less than 0.5% in terms of a rejection rate of any problem, both from a source perspective or any kind of issue like you're describing at all. That's an incredibly low number for something that has a high automated touch.
And the second part of that question is to do with the delivery. You were talking about likeness and image rights. And let's say there's a film Sony puts out, and they find out they didn't have the likeness and image rights. They didn't have biographical rights to this story.
Yep.
Suddenly there's a lawsuit, a person wins the lawsuit, and what do? Can you get the film back? Can you retract it?
There's nothing to retract. We simply disable it. Instantly. the very next person who goes to play it will not find it. It's done. And it's not a matter of having to, and it's exactly that problem, right? It's exactly the problem of, well, how do I claw it back? Right? Lionsgate spent many years buying a ton of companies, and the biggest thing that they had is the companies that they bought didn't know where all their libraries were. And so they had to actually go out and try and figure out where all that stuff was. They may still be trying to do some of that. This would fundamentally change those kind of things, right? When Sony and MGM did a merger and then unwound it a couple of days later, we had to go through the trouble. I was at Ascendant this week. Ingest everything and then take everything out, right? And it's just like, wouldn't it be wonderful to just turn it off or reassign it? Like, those were fantasies back in 2005. Those are absolute realities today, and it's not technology that stops us. It is huge boardroom emotional decisions. It is technologists who say, I have to own, I have to have an empire, versus saying, actually, what I'm building is at another place that is a differentiator.
Thank you.
No, sure. Anything else? Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.